Pacifico, Phil Henry.
The world-famous Phil Henry Show, every night till 1 o'clock on the West Coast and 4 a.m. on the East Coast, the news, talk, and entertainment show that knows what it's talking about. And this is the show that has coined the phrase, truth is our bitch. And it will be for however long we are sitting at these microphones, as they say, whether it is in the radio world, the podcast world, in the television world, whether wherever there's a microphone that we can stand at and say, you know,
whatever.
Yeah, whatever. We'll be there. So anyway, welcome to the program. It's a Tuesday. Yesterday was President's Day. Yes, we took it off. And why did we do that? Well, because it was President's Day. And, you know, I can just kind of...
Yeah, but why take it off?
We took it off because it's a holiday, man. And that's what we do. And I honor the presidents. And more importantly, I honor myself. And I take those days off. A couple of notes. We're online at philhenryshow.com. That's philhenryshow.com. A backstage pass gets you access to a live streaming video of our show right now. We are on all devices. You can take a look at us mobile on your iPhone if you're on your iPhone tonight. You can look at us on your iPad if you're on your iPad tonight. Go on over to the Starbucks. Sit there and pretend like you're doing your homework. But in point of fact, you're watching our show.
Yay!
Well, that's not a very good thing to encourage people to do, though.
Well, I think it is. I mean, Margaret, by the way, Margaret Gray is with us. The Bobby Dooley podcast has dropped, as we mentioned, features Patty Arquette. Yesterday, we were at the studios of Molotov LEG in West L.A. and interviewed for the Bobby Dooley podcast the great Joel McHale.
And he was, I understand that he was delightful.
Joel McHale is just a great guy. He's a solid guy, and he's a big Phil Henry backer, a supporter. I'd like it to be with money, but...
You're kidding, right?
Of course I'm kidding.
That'd be great, though, if he'd finance you.
And don't spit on me, man.
What?
But when you go finance, you go finance you.
Well, I didn't spit on you on purpose.
Yeah, if you go finance, I'll just take it easy. No, bud, he's not going to finance me.
What, do you want him to sponsor the Phil Henry Show?
No, he could be like Phil's sponsor.
No, it's not like that. I mean, just Joel is a very great guy. He's a big fan of comedy and humor and blah, blah, blah. But he hung out for 2 hours with Bobby Dooley, and wait till you hear it. It's going to be a two-parter, man. It's going to be a two-parter Bobby Dooley podcast with Joel McHale. And just, it's very interesting. It's very interesting. Here's a guy that's on The Soup, and he's on Community, and a show that has made its mark. It's a big hit show. And he's a comic. He's a funny man by trade, okay?
Right.
Even those guys... can't escape the nitpicking little bastards. You know, these little scum suckers that are out there that are looking to just... Like, for instance, I saw he tweeted on his tweet...
It's got a tweet feed.
On the tweet feed.
It's the Twitter feed, Phil. God almighty, don't talk as if you've had to have reconstructive surgery on your tongue.
Well, what do you mean reconstructive? It's the Twitter feed. And anyway, he said something about, you know, and there was a picture of him and I that we posted on our website, if you can look. And he said, we look homeless. That's all he said. Oh, my God, that was the worst. That just, he got all these comments blocked.
Why?
Because they thought it was insensitive to the homeless. Are you kidding me? See, I don't believe that. I don't believe that people have that much concern about homeless people. I think they just hate certain celebrities. I just think they hate celebrity, and they're looking for any excuse to insult a guy. And I just looked at these comments, so...
Wait a minute. He said, what did he say?
He just said in this picture, he said that we looked homeless. But just the mere mention of the word homeless in any context related to funny, and I think that there's absolutely nothing wrong with mentioning homelessness and trying to make a joke out of it occasionally. I don't think it's not like he's saying that the homeless are the scum of the earth and let's run them over with tractors, you know.
Why would you? I don't understand that.
Yeah, well, you're going to get a tractor out there.
I'm talking about just mistreating them. And it's not like he said anything like that. He just said, we look homeless. Oh, my God. You would have thought he was telling an anti-Semitic joke or some racist joke of some kind. And the vehemence was that he was met with was so extreme that I had to come to only one conclusion, and that is that people, they just don't like his celebrity, or they just don't like him, or they don't like his show, or something about him that they don't like personally. It's got nothing to do with the homeless crack. But it gave them the opportunity. Blocked.
They probably thought it was starting a big controversy.
Yeah, a lot of people will do that. They'll hope it's controversial.
Well, how controversial is that going to be? You know.
Well, I mean, maybe he could. Maybe they think they're starting some big. Oh, hey, Joel McHale, look what he did. He dissed the homeless, and next thing you know, he's fired from his job. You know.
They're not going to fire him from his job for saying that someone's homeless.
He didn't say that. He said that he and I look like two homeless guys.
Well, you know, if you want to, here's a joke. That's offensive to the, well, that is offensive to the homeless, it is.
Well, that's what he was saying.
Yeah, but, so they were being angry on your behalf.
Well, I mean, if you think about it, look at it this way. He says that he and I look like we're homeless, right? Is that what he said?
Phil, I don't know. You saw it.
That's what he said.
Yeah, I saw it. That's what he said.
Okay. That's offensive to the homeless, according to the people that tweeted.
Yeah.
All right, then that must mean that he and I are lower than the homeless people. I mean, in other words, whatever constitutes the social standing of homeless people, the fact that we said we look that way is offensive to us. Or it's offensive to the homeless. Because they're saying, you two guys would say that you look like homeless people? You two guys, that's an insult to the homeless.
No, I don't think you're getting it right.
No, yeah, that's right.
It is right, Margaret. Think about it. You know, so if that's the case, that we are lower than the homeless, and to compare ourselves to the homeless is a horrible thing because we're such scum-sucking dogs, then what the hell were you following us in the first place for?
Well, they're following Joel McHale.
Yeah, that's what I mean, Joel McHale. What are they following him in the first place for?
Did any of your followers block you?
No, because I didn't say it. He did. But the fact is, what were they following him for?
Maybe they didn't know he's lower than whale dump.
He didn't say he's lower than a whale dump. He said he said that we looked homeless. And they said, that's offensive to the homeless. Okay, that must mean that we, comparing ourselves to the homeless, that's terrible. We are scum. What were they doing following him?
No, I think I don't think that's it. I think...
Well, I know it's probably not what they intended, but I think that's the effect of it. Anyway, welcome to the program. We have a couple of... some guy, you know, I'm not doing news talk. I don't want to do news talk. I want to get away from it. This is one of the final decisions that I've made on behalf of our radio show as I look to continue major, you know, evolution of the show and major revampments of the show. And because you're taking news, if you want to call it that, from a newspaper, doesn't necessarily mean you're doing news talk. Now, I know that that's difficult for some, and I'm not talking to you guys. I'm talking specifically to the guy on Facebook today, some pain in the ass.
Well, if you're doing news talk, it's a thing.
What did he say?
He says, well, excuse me, if you're not doing news talk anymore, but you're still doing news...
No, man, I'm looking at stuff out of a news website. It doesn't mean it's news talk. I'm not talking about. Oh God, I'm telling you. It's a frustrating thing. Thank God the news talk format is almost officially dead. I don't know whether you know this or not, Mr. and Mrs. Listener, but you're going to be seeing news talk fading away, but fast, ever more rapidly here over the next few months. It is dead in the water. Did you know that? Is anybody telling you that? No, Phil is, though. In an affidavit at bail hearings, track star denies he intended to kill his girlfriend. That's right, early on February 14th. Oh, my God. You mean Valentine's Day?
How do you like that? That paddle foot.
Knock it with the paddle foot.
God, is great. That's racism.
It's not. It was a cute little reference to the one. Is this the one with the he's got feet like they're webbed feet. Is that right?
No, they're not webbed feet. He's got these blades on his feet that... This is the guy who is... Oh, I get it now. So because he's accused of murder, it's all right to make fun of him.
No, I didn't say... Where are you getting that?
Would you have said to this guy... Would you have said he's a paddle foot if he wasn't charged with murder?
I would.
No, you wouldn't. No, you wouldn't.
Yeah, well, how do you know I would?
Because I know you wouldn't. I know that you wouldn't just gratuitously insult some guy with two prosthetic limbs because, ha, 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 isn't it funny? Look at this guy with the paddle foot.
Well, I don't... Look, the man is accused of murder, and I say the gloves come off. Look, there are very few times in this... Never mind.
There are very few times what?
There are very few times when you can look at someone who has ridiculous-looking prosthetics for legs. Like, I saw this man, Bud, you were with me. The pogo sticks?
Yeah, this guy had a pogo stick for a leg.
What do you mean he had a pogo stick for a leg?
Yeah, I think I saw that guy.
Yeah.
What do you mean he had a pogo stick?
Yeah, what? He had a singular pogo stick. The other leg was a normal leg.
Did he have two prosthetic legs?
No, he had one prosthetic leg. The other looked like a pogo stick.
Well, did he bounce around on it?
No, I kept asking, hey, why don't you bounce over there and everything? He's all, shut up, shut up.
You know what? You guys are whack.
He's the one with the pogo, not him, but the one that we saw.
All right, we're going to be right back. World famous Phil Henry Show. Guy's got a pogo stick for a leg.
He did, I swear. I swear on the grave. Well, my mother...
Your mom's not dead.
If she was dead.
If she was dead, you'd swear on her grave. Until then, you got nothing to swear on.
I swear on... It's like...
Excuse me, but it's like futures, Phil. You know how you buy futures?
Yeah, I'm buying a future on my mother's grave.
You're buying a future. We'll be right back. The world-famous Phil Henry Show, 877-876-PHIL.
Truth is our bitch. The Phil Henry Show.
Yeah, baby.
I'm buying a future on the swearing on my mother's grave.
Yeah, thank you. Very sad news, and I'm quite sure that many of you heard it already. Jerry Buss, the owner of the L.A. Lakers, and this is a story that I think anybody who's interested in the world of professional basketball, anyone that's interested in the Lakers, but certainly professional basketball, this is a big story. Jerry Buss died in hospital over the weekend. Dr. Buss was 80 years of age. He owned the Los Angeles Lakers. He'd been hospitalized at Cedars-Sinai in L.A. for the past few months due to a previously undisclosed intestinal problem, though it was revealed yesterday he'd been battling cancer the entire time. I don't know, I guess it was colon cancer, you know.
What's colon cancer?
Those are the intestines. After starting his career as a chemist, Buss soon found his true calling in the real estate biz, snapping up properties all over Los Angeles before moving on to the sporting world. In 1979, he made history when he purchased the Lakers, the L.A. Kings, and the Forum for $67.5 million.
That's all.
That's it. Think about that. $67.5 million. At that time, that was the largest transaction in sports. Now, a lot of guys have done that. You know, Jerry Jones, when he bought the Cowboys and he bought the stadium, and you're just buying this enormous package. But under his ownership, and this was in 79, and the Lakers during the 70s sucked. And I mean, with the exception of that one team.
Yeah, you said they won a championship in 1970.
No, it didn't, man. It said 71, 72.
Ain't that in the 70?
No, it ain't.
It's in the 70s, bud. You want to pluralize it?
Well, technical question.
It's not technical, you... What a bozo. I'm going to bring in a big red clown nose... Can we get him fitted, please?
That's very funny, Margaret.
No, I'm serious. Can we get him fitted?
For what?
I think it's only right that he have some kind of a clown, any kind of a clown affectation, so that I don't sit here and I make the mistake and I'm tricked and I'm fooled. Every single night I'm tricked and fooled into taking him seriously. Now I want either a clown nose on it.
You kidding me, man? That's the funniest thing I've ever heard in my life.
Yeah, even I'm laughing.
You think it's funny, huh?
Margaret, are you serious?
I'm telling you.
So you walk in and you look at Bud and you take him seriously.
I want either the fright wig. Never mind. Would you? You don't even have to put Frank on.
What are you going to do?
I'm calling my husband, if you don't mind. Do you think it's any of your business?
Yeah, I do, if you're on the air.
I said off the air.
No, we're not going to put a clown...
Frank, hi. He's on the air.
Okay, in any event, folks, so Jerry Buss...
Yeah, do you know, who's the man with the fright wigs? The fright wig concession over at...
Dr. Jerry Buss passed on...
Yeah, what's his name? Lou?
Would you come on with the phone and the fright wig and everything? Hey, Frank, how you doing?
Give me the phone back. Yeah, the Fright Week concession.
Jerry Buss, a great man, and I believe that...
Kenny what? What's the last? Is he... Oh, a Jew.
You give me that.
I got the name, doesn't it?
Thanks. Hey, Frank, it's Phil. How you doing? So this guy sells wigs, huh?
Now you're doing it.
Well, sorry. I got to go, Frank. Yeah, never mind. What are you doing?
I was talking off the air.
I'm listening to you. Oh, a Jew.
Well, Frank's Jewish.
What do you mean fright wig concession?
I'm buying a fright wig for that, sitting next to you, on your left arm, that one.
I'm not putting on no fright wigs. You might as well just kiss that goodbye. That idea is stillborn.
Oh, okay, Alfred Hitchcock.
Boy, you guys, if you don't shut up here, man, I want to talk about this thing. Jerry Buss, I'm starting all over again. Dr. Jerry Buss, owner of the Los Angeles Lakers, died early this morning at the age of 80. Buss had been hospitalized at Cedars-Sinai in Los Angeles for the past few months due to a previously undisclosed intestinal problem. It was revealed yesterday he'd been battling cancer the entire time. After starting his career as a chemist, Buss soon found his true calling in the real estate market, snapping up properties all over Los Angeles before moving on to the sporting world. Under his ownership, in 1979, I should say, and this is important, he bought the Lakers, the Kings, and the Forum, which is where those teams played, the so-called Fabulous Forum, which no one, I don't know what they do there now, probably have high school or some other competition.
I think they have, do they have roller derby?
Yeah, they got probably going to do a roller derby.
No, that's not necessarily they're doing roller derby.
That's what they always do at places that...
They always do roller derby in rundown hovels. I'm not saying that the Forum is.
Yeah, I would watch the rundown hovel thing. I don't know what shape the Forum's in. Probably in pretty good shape. You know.
Oh, you were about to say V, and then you stopped.
Yeah, you went, it's probably in V, pretty good shape.
Yeah, you started with a V.
Okay, great. I started with a V, and I wound up with a P.
Have you ever been to the Forum?
Like about a billion times. I was at the Forum for concerts. I was at the Forum for Laker games. I was at the Forum for Kings games.
What about roller derby?
I've never been to any roller derby ever in my life, except watching it on television.
But do you feel it's a good roller derby?
Will you get off of the roller derby, please? They're not bringing back roller derby. It isn't going to happen. So why don't you guys just give it a rest? This is everybody here wants roller derby brought back.
I think it's a money-making idea, and I'd like to see them try.
Jeez.
What?
Never mind. All right, so Jerry Buss, under his ownership, Buss watched dozens of all-time greats. Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, Magic Johnson, James Worthy, Shaquille O'Neal, and Kobe Bryant win the Lakers 10 NBA championships. He was inducted to the Basketball Hall of Fame in 2010. Buss was also an avid poker player and appeared on several TV shows, including High Stakes Poker and Poker After Dark, which I think sounds very tasteless.
Well, Phil, the filth in your mind.
There's not, that's not.
Just saying, Poker After Dark? Dr. Buss?
Oh, I get it.
In any event, so that was Jerry Buss. And the interest, by the way, and I don't want to take this too far afield, but again, our condolences to the family. And he was, like so many other entrepreneurs that enter sports, guys that really didn't know much about it, but they bought into it and they changed it. They're using their own senses to what is good marketing, what's good promotion. And I think that's what owners, good owners, really contribute at the end of the day to any sport. It's their ability to publicize the sport. It's their ability to turn the an also-ran team in terms of the public sense into a team that's a front-page team. A lot of teams are successful on the field, but they lack some sort of magic when it comes to the ability of ownership and the front office to really make the team a part of the community. So Jerry Buss had that. The Lakers are owned by a guy named Bob Short before Buss, and Bob Short came out to L.A. from Minneapolis. He had the Minneapolis Lakers.
So that is true.
What's true?
That the Lakers were in Minneapolis.
Yeah, why do you think they call it a Laker? Because of the lake.
Oh, my God, that's asinine. Is that why they're called the Lakers?
Yeah, because they were from the land of the lakes.
What?
That's the most jacked up.
What's wrong with that in any event? Now, look at this. Now I'm at the break. I had to kill somebody.
Oh, Phil, you're always threatening that.
We'll be right back, and I'll give you the whole thing. Plus, Very interesting article that I read over the weekend. What is the most well, you know the most valuable sports franchise in the world, right? Maybe you don't. But what are the next nine in the top 10 most valuable sports franchises in the world? We'll have those for you coming back here in the world-famous Phil Henry Show. And we'll also be talking with a very, very special guest, Art Griego, on value in sports and owning a sports team. Art is a former cargo pilot who would like to, guess what, start a roller derby team right here in Los Angeles. We'll talk to
Phil
him.
Phil Henry.
You there, Art?
Yeah, Phil, I just want to...
World-famous Phil Henry Show.
All right, in a moment, we're going to talk about the most valuable franchises in sports, and you're going to be you may guess a few, and you might be right, you might guess a few, you might be wrong. I don't think it's any secret. It's been in the headlines for quite some time over the last few weeks. That I'll tell you, the number one team is Manchester United. They're number one.
Now, what is Manchester United?
They play soccer.
Yes, they play soccer.
But excuse me, Bud, you know what? They play soccer.
Bud, you want to hear it?
Bud, you don't have to yell stuff.
God.
They play, yeah, they're the football team in English soccer, English football, Premier League. Manchester United is worth somewhere in the neighborhood of $3.6 billion. It's unbelievable. And they've got sponsorship deals that are unbelievable. They've got sponsorship deals. One of the things about professional soccer that you probably notice is that you can put the name of sponsors on your jersey. These are very lucrative. This is an extremely lucrative source of income for teams. And Manchester United is so popular that they have a sponsor for their practice jerseys.
What?
What do you mean the practice? They wear a different uniform when they practice?
Yeah. They wear practice jerseys, and they wear a sponsor on the practice jersey. Because remember... this is all on television. People are watching on TV. They're seeing it in the stadium. They have a sponsor for the regular jerseys. They have a sponsor for the name of the stadium. And their stadium is the Emirates Stadium, which I guess...
Does that mean like a oil guy?
What does that mean, the Emirates?
That's the name of the stadium, Emirates Stadium. I'm going to have to assume that it's... I think the team is owned.
Wait a minute. Are you trying to tell me that the team's owned by... A camel?
You start with that.
Man, you don't say camel jockey. I didn't say camel jockey. You did.
You were going to say it.
Well, but to answer your question, Bud, yes.
Now, would you watch it, please? It's owned by a UAE gentleman.
What's that?
United Arab Emirates. A businessman. A man of means and a man who's been very good for the team. What his name is, I don't know. But obviously the guy's been fantastic for the team because it's a very lucrative team. It's a very lucrative business that he's invested in. He's made the team a moneymaker, and the team is, right now, they're leading the league. They're in first place in the Premier League. All right, Art Griego is going to join us here. Then we'll get into some of these other discussions. Art is a former, as it says in his bio that we have here, former cargo plane pilot. And what does that mean, Art? I thought I know you flew freight.
Cargo plane is, I think, I have flown freight. I had a charter freight business. I also flew, as you know, Phil, I flew commercial for a number of years before Angie and I got into the freight business of carrying up commercial freight. And then we were also in the private passenger jet business for a while. I put down on my resume there cargo because it's something to be in. I'm not going to have much when I leave this world. I won't be the most famous guy, but I hope that my grandkids and my kids can look on my resume and say, that was exciting.
What do you mean exciting?
Is this Margaret?
Yes.
What do I mean exciting? I want them to be able to look on their father or grandfather's resume and say he was a cargo. He was a cargo pilot. He was a bush pilot.
What's a bush pilot?
What's with all these questions, Phil? I thought you...
They're asking questions.
Yeah, but I thought you're the guy.
God, you're a little touchy.
Well, I'm tired of answering five different people. And then I hear Bud with the...
All right, we'll take it easy, okay? I mean, let me just conduct the interview, all right?
I can't answer the question. I didn't even ask one.
Who was that?
That was Robert.
Oh, I don't want to... I'm talking to Henry.
What are you so touchy about?
Because it's a very delicate area that you're getting into. I want my grandkids to think of me as a cargo pilot. Is there something wrong with that?
Well, what does that mean, being a cargo pilot, to you?
It means I grew a pair. It means I had guts. It means I flew a cargo, you know.
Well, what, like Indiana Jones?
Is that her again?
Margaret, let me just...
Well, this is... All right, you know what? I'm going to the toilet.
Yeah, go to the toilet, Margaret.
What an ass.
I just wonder why you seem a little touchy.
No, I don't like coming on the show when I got 900 different people asking me questions. Can we just move on? I'm a cargo pilot because I want my kids to think of me as something more than a guy sitting up front while babies are screaming and fat men are sleeping and I want them to think I hauled something more and important than fat people and babies, and I want them to think that I went places more exciting than Las Vegas or Denver.
Well, but it's not true. You were not a cargo pilot.
I was a freight pilot.
Where did you go when you were a freight pilot? What's the most exotic location?
I didn't... What I'm trying to say...
No, but seriously, what's the most exotic location when you were hauling freight?
Probably Honolulu.
Honolulu?
Yeah.
Anywhere else?
No, I mean, I did a West Coast run. I was basically just up and down the coast. I did fly a couple times to Hawaii. San Diego. There, that's as exotic as it got.
So in order to put down cargo pilot...
Yeah, I put down cargo pilot so that my grandkids would think of me as an adventurer. I'm going to tell you right now to shut him up. Are you going to tell him to shut up?
Bud, shut up.
Better tell me to shut up.
Shut up. Just shut up. I don't want to hear it. Shut up.
Why? It seems to me like you came on this show with a problem.
I got a problem because the financing for the roller derby is not in place. You wanted to ask me about that. I wanted to get into it. And then you start in on the cargo plane. So there were two things embarrassing me. I thought only one. You understand? I thought we were going to talk about the roller derby.
I did want to start with roller derby. I just wanted to tell people that you're kind of entering a new business. You used to be a pilot.
Yeah, and then you got off onto the cargo thing. So here it is, ladies and gentlemen. My name is Art Griego. I am lying on my resume saying that I was a cargo pilot, so I'll look like an adventurer to my grandkids. And number two, the financing for the roller derby, the Griegos, which is what I don't hear him laughing yet.
Are you kidding me?
Get out of here, Bud, will you? The Griegos.
Yeah. You want to laugh? Go ahead. Have the guy laugh. Go ahead, Bud. If you're there, go ahead and laugh. Yeah, okay, good. So he got his jollies.
So you were angry coming on the program. You were nervous.
I was nervous that I had to go in. I was nervous enough talking about the fact that the financing for the Griegos is gone. It's done. There won't be roller derby. And I was hoping to play it, to have them play at the Forum.
What was the league?
What was the what?
What was the league? You had a roller derby team.
Well, it's a de facto, it's an organization of teams that play exhibitions. We were not going to keep real scores. We're not going to keep a real league statistical sheet. We just would tell people, oh, hey, you know, we're number one. And then...
How does that work? I don't understand.
Well, in roller derby, people will come into the arena to watch the roller derby players engage in the physical nature of the sport, the exhibition. But nobody who is a roller derby fan that we have any record of cares what the standings are. I don't think there's a record anywhere. I don't think you're going to find any anecdotal information or otherwise that anyone that followed roller derby cared one bit about ratings or, excuse me, about the standings, about the nothing.
So it's not necessary to keep standings records.
It's not necessary to keep statistics. So what we did have, though, is an organization of teams, the L.A. Griegos, the San Diego something, I don't know what the San Diego, I think they were going to be the Bombers. They're going to be named after another one of the older teams. The Bay Area, Flaming. I don't know.
The Bay Area Flaming. So what was this, some kind of a joke?
No, it's just the number of the different teams. Now, I wanted to come on the program tonight and tell you that we had financing in place to open the Griegos.
But there will be no Griegos. Because the money, I couldn't get the money together.
Well, I mean, it's not as if we're talking here about, is there a chance to, you know, come back next year?
Wait. We're not talking about what?
We're not talking about you buying into the National Football League here. We're not talking about you, you know, buying into Major League Baseball.
No, but we are talking about a dream that I had. It was my dream. And I wanted to bring roller derby back to the roller derby fans of L.A. I wanted to give back to the community for everything that they've done.
You wanted to give back?
That's right.
And you're giving back to the Los Angeles community by giving them a roller derby team.
Well, Ms. Gray, I'm sorry that it's not something as special as what you and Frank would be able to pull out of your rear end. And
that's not necessary. I simply was trying to get you to... I'm trying to pull out of my rear end. What does that mean?
Well, you know, I mean, it's all I know. It's all that I got in this world. I wanted to give back to the community, and roller derby was the only thing I could think of.
What?
You know, I'm sorry it's not as flashy as something...
Well, hold on for a minute, and I understand what he's saying, Margaret. I mean, but that was rather insulting to say to her it's not what her and Frank could pull out of their rear ends.
Well, guess what? I mean, when you listen to Margaret talk, she could pull a... I mean, they're so wealthy, she could pull a Mercedes-Benz right out of her ass. Now, I mean literally.
I don't have to sit and listen to this any longer.
Is it the toilet, or...
Where are you going, Margaret?
No, I'm going to go have a cigarette.
Oh, she's going to have a cigarette. No, I was not able, and that's what's depressing me tonight.
Well, I think that, to be honest with you, that's sad, and I'm sorry, but I don't think, you know, you should sweat buckets over this.
Well, okay, Phil, so what you're telling me is, while I was sweating buckets, the people of L.A. could give a sweet you-know-what.
I don't think you're going to get a lot of people really bothered that there's no roller derby. Hung up. All right.
Yeah, hold on. He's back.
What do you mean he's back?
He's back.
Did we get cut off?
No, I hung up on you. I thought that was the most insensitive thing.
I'm going to say it again, Art, okay?
If you say it again, I'll hang up again.
Well, great. I'll say it again. The L.A. fan, sports fan or otherwise, it doesn't care with... See, Art, if you're listening, he doesn't care whether there's roller derby. And neither do the sports fans of America. They don't care whether there's roller... Is he back?
Yeah.
What is it with you hanging up on me?
I'm hanging up because you're being offensive. All right? My dream was to give back to the people of this city who had supported my cargo plane business, not my freight business, my cargo plane business. I spent a lot of money having pictures of myself taken in one of those...
That's the Bush helmet.
No, it's not a bush hat. A bush hat. It's a Kiwi bush hat. And, you know, for you to say that the people of this city...
They don't care about any kind of roller... They don't care about roller derby, man. 877-876-PHIL. Hey, you know...
No, that is very insensitive.
Put him on hold, will you, for God's sake, bud?
Keeps coming back.
877-876-PHIL, world-famous Phil Hendry Show. Looks like we won't have any roller derby. Oh, well. But, you know, Art was trying to give back to the community that had given so much to him. We'll be right back on a world-famous Phil Hendry Show. More on the track star in South Africa, Mr. Pistorius, and the murder of his girlfriend. Just exactly what kind of defense is this guy going to mount? The world-famous Phil Hendry Show.
Truth is our bitch.
Man. Yeah, and a diamond high show.
It's the Phil Hendry Show.
Hey, welcome back here, the world famous Phil Hendry Show, and I will say to Mr. Griego. And I can't have you hanging up.
I apologize.
I can't have you continually hang up. Art Griego has joined us. What happened to our Phil TV here? Oh, there we go. I just would say to you this. I understand that your business interest had to do with getting a roller derby team in the city of Los Angeles. You couldn't get the financing. I want to ask you this. Is there real financing in place for the other teams?
I believe that the San Diego, I think it's the San Diego Ape
The San Diego Ape. Is that the name of the team?
Well, Mr. Henry, can I just mention...
I just want to ask you, is that the name of the team?
I'll tell you in a minute, but can I just say, that's the kind of attitude that has hurt our efforts at starting this league.
Well, wait a minute. Wait, what attitude?
I'm talking... When I said to you that we have a team, the San Diego Ape, and you go, the San Diego Ape? So, in other words, the audience takes away from that your incredulity and frankly, a level of disgust...
No, it's an unusual name. And by the way, I thought that there was an expansion football franchise down there in the new Dickman America called the San Diego Ape.
Well, if there is, I don't think that the what's the name of the team?
The San Diego Ape.
I don't think they'll mind a roller derby team using it, will they?
Well, these things are usually, it's usually a copyright.
There's usually a copyright on the use of these things or a trademark.
Well, I know all about it, Ms. Gray. You know, you don't have to lecture me like I'm a child.
Well, it sounds to me like you're not really familiar. If there's a team down there already, and I think there is a football team, a professional football team, called the San Diego Ape, then the San Diego Ape roller derby team...
Well, I'll tell you right now that I know Rudy Shmore and so many other principals involved in getting the Ape, you know, that's the team, that's what they're calling it, getting the Ape up and running. And I didn't hear anything about this.
Getting the Ape up and running? Are you putting me on? That sounds like they picked that name on account of it sounds good.
Yeah, that's generally why you pick names. God. Wow, are you kidding?
Well, Bud, they're gonna name a team something that the fans will embrace, something that sounds good. To me, it sounds asinine, if you want my honest opinion. Why is it called the Ape?
I beg your pardon, Mr. Henry?
Why is it called the San Diego Ape?
Mr. Henry.
Well, I know.
Excuse me. He asked me, didn't he? Did you ask me?
Yes, I asked you. You know, I've noticed something.
Are you going to give a speech, or can I get to what I want to say?
I've noticed something here over the last couple of weeks. It's getting mentally and emotionally more and more like a middle school around here.
I know. Did you ask me?
You know.
Are you talking to me?
Yes, I am talking to you, to Art, to Bud, to everybody.
You asked me a question, Mr. Henry. The reason why it's called the San Diego Ape is because there's something called a zoo in the city, and I don't mean to be a smartass.
No, you don't mean to be smartass. There's something called a zoo. I know what a zoo is.
Yeah, well, you know what the San Diego Zoo is, right?
Yes, I do.
Then you know it's the biggest thing going down there. They don't have anything in San Diego other than a zoo. City of Los Angeles, cities like, I don't know, New York, Boston, there are things they've got. Stuff that they've got that people will say, I want to go to Boston, I want to go and I want to see. And there's a million things. Washington, D.C. is a classic example. Millions of things to do. But the only thing San Diego has, the only thing they've got to hang their hat on, or their swimming trunks, or whatever you want to call it, is a zoo where animals, you know, go and where they go. Well, they don't exactly go there.
No, they don't go there. They're captured and thrown in there.
Yeah, it's more like it's a prison.
Oh, will you knock it off? Can I please get 5 seconds without him?
Go ahead. So they named it the Ape because of the zoo.
Yes. And if you think for 5 seconds that Rudy Shmore and some of the guys that I know involved in the San Diego Ape roller derby team are going to just give that away to some group of guys that say they got a football team...
I happen to know that there's a professional football team that's going to start playing down there next year called the San Diego Ape. You can do whatever you want. Who's the guy?
What?
Who's the owner?
Rudy Shmore.
Rudy Shmore. What does he do?
Okay, that's... Boy.
What does he do?
Mr. Henry, first it's the Ape, and now what does he do? Yeah, everything is so... Everything.
Look, I'm not trying to insult you. I just want to get some information.
Everything associated with the Ape and the roller derby... You know, business that we're trying to put together, you have just mocked.
Can I say, Art, I'm not trying to be a smartass myself, Art. You've got to let Phil just react. I think a lot of this is very unusual. Roller derby coming back is one thing. Then you have a controversy between these two teams.
Yeah, I mean, if you're saying that there's a roller derby team called the Ape, and I know of another, don't you think that that's a problem? Now, you're saying to me, I know, you're saying that Rudy Shmore and the rest of these investors... are going to fight to hold on to the Ape name. Is that it?
Yes. As a matter of fact.
But you don't go Ape if another team has it. Ow!
Yeah, man. I don't... You know, I'm getting sick of that.
God.
Bud, why don't you stop with that laugh? Because everybody knows you're doing it on purpose.
Yeah, I'm going to come to the phone. I swear to God, I'll come to the phone if I hear that again.
You're on.
If you laugh again, no, you won't have to come to the phone. I'm going to kick your ass out of here.
If I hear it one more time.
All right. Wait a minute. I'm out. How do they do that? I don't understand.
I don't know.
I'll get you, I swear.
Good!
I don't know, but I'll tell you something. I think it ruins the speaking of credulity, I think it ruins the credulity, the credibility, the credule, just all of that. I'm sorry.
But Miss Gray, that's really gross.
Why do you do that?
I'm sorry, Phil, but I eat healthy, and one of the byproducts of that, hold on. One of the byproducts is gas. Now live with it, son. Live in it.
All right, we'll be right back. It's the world-famous Phil Henry Show. There's 1 hour of fantastic radio. We've talked about the San Diego Ape Roller Derby team.
You know, Mr. Henry, you can laugh all you want about it.
All right, go back inside the phone, man. And more, a big money diamond heist in Belgium. Let's talk about that, because that's the stuff of James Bond movies. It's the stuff, frankly, of bullcrap, but it actually happened. Next, the world-famous Phil Henry Show.
Phil Henry.
I'm going back at the phone.
All right, I'm here now.
Broadcasting from the shores of El Pacifico, Phil Henry.
Now, I did promise, when we got rid of, I shouldn't say got rid of,
That man has a mental, there's a mental issue, and I think it needs...
Yeah, he's...
Hold on, I'm not done yet, Bud.
Hold on, Bud.
God. No, what's wrong?
I'm not done. There's nothing wrong. I just didn't finish saying what I wanted to say. I was going to say yay. Okay.
Yes, Margaret, we're...
Never mind.
Margaret, just because I said...
Never mind.
Just because I said that we've got time limitations.
Never mind.
Every time you don't get your way, you go to the bathroom, you go get a cigarette.
Never mind.
Yes, she means never mind.
That's exactly what I mean.
All right. Well, I will complete your thought for you then, Margaret.
No, you won't.
Yes, I will. Art Griego is a bizarre, weird ass.
That was not... Now I'm going to... That was not my thought. Now I'm going...
To the toilet.
To the toilet.
All right, so anyway, welcome back to the world-famous Phil Henry Show, where truth is our bitch. We're online at philhenryshow.com. Get a backstage pass, and with that, you will get access to live streaming video of the show, as well as our audio library, all kinds of stuff. It's really cool. Get a backstage pass. We also have two podcasts now. We have our regular Phil Henry Show podcast, which is just interesting things from our archives. That podcast, by the way, I don't know how much longer we're going to have it.
What? Well, I've got a lot of people going to be upset.
Well, you know. I think that the one that we're excited about, the Bobby Dooley podcast, and then more to come as we continue. But the Bobby Dooley podcast right now, I think it was number 15 on the iTunes comedy podcast. Don't tell Bobby it's in the comedy file.
What?
I don't think she knows it's comedy. And we will have Bobby on this hour to talk a little bit about the podcast, the two-hour Joel McHale special coming up with Bobby Dooley and Joel McHale going at it. Now, I had said that I was going to read to you a list here of the top sports franchises in the world in terms of value, and we're going to do just that. I think that what we need, though, is someone who might know Wall Street a little bit, or at least know how to assess these things. I don't really know... How, you know, I'm not exactly sure how this is done, and let's get, not that he knows Wall Street, but let's get on Doug Danger from the Orange County Courier to talk to us a little bit. Doug, how are you doing?
Well, I'm doing really good. You say not that I know Wall Street. I did do some financial reporting, so I'm a gay man and a gay journalist. I'm looking into different things, different aspects of news, what I do. That's what I do. I don't know about anybody else, but I'm gay man, gay journalist. Okay?
All right, I understand that. Are you familiar with the relative value of sports franchises?
I am familiar with the relative value of sports franchises. As a matter of fact, I could tell you the Manchester United, which you had just mentioned, Phil, and I'm a gay man and a gay journalist, and I heard that Manchester United had been the number one rated sports franchise in the world in terms of value. And I put a call in to my friend Josh Biggin, who is with the Manchester Bugle. I forget the name of the paper. I think it's the Manchester Bugle or something.
The Manchester Bugle. Look up, Bud.
Well, it's not the Bugle, no. It's the Manchester. It's got a name. It's like the Manchester Daily Blab or something.
What do you mean the Daily Blab?
I don't know the name of it, Phil, all right? Look, I'm a gay man and a gay journalist. That doesn't mean I know the name of the daily paper in Manchester, England. I think it's the Bugle or the Daily Blab or the Daily Blather Blabbermouth.
Well, it's not going to be the Daily Blabbermouth. That's something out of a cartoon.
Oh, you're back from the toilet. I listen religiously, Margaret, just to see how often you go to the can.
Oh, I got to kill it.
Hold on.
I'm serious, Margaret. It's one of the most entertaining moments of my night. To listen to you get upset.
Is that right? So you think that I'm just a big child and I leave every time I don't get my way and go to the
Did you say to the ballroom?
No, to the I didn't say ballroom at all.
Well, it sounded like you were going to say you go to the ballroom, and that's not where you go to the toilet.
Yeah, that's pretty expensive.
Shut up, Bud.
She didn't say ballroom, said bathroom.
I know she said bathroom. Okay?
Why are you making fun of her?
Hey, Robert, I'm a gay man and a gay journalist, okay?
Well, look, I'm a black man, and you're making fun of a woman. I mean, so that's three minority right there.
That's three what?
That three minority right there. You're gay, I'm black, she's female.
Thank you very much, Robert.
You know what I'm saying? You have to have some respect.
Hey, have some respect for me. I'm gay. I'm a gay man and a gay journalist, okay?
I don't give a damn you're gay. You have to have respect for the lady.
All right, look, I've had about enough of this. Back off, Robert.
He's defending me, Phil.
I understand that. I'll deal with any of the hurt feelings of anybody around here.
How do you laugh? How about that? Coming at me? You know, I'm a gay man and a gay...
I know you're a gay man, gay journalist. I'm just saying, have a little respect.
Back the hell off, will you?
Hey, you know what, Phil? I'm gay.
You know what the next guy that's going to walk out of here? Me. That's who's walking out of here next.
What'd he do?
Well, what do you think he did? He hung up.
What is that supposed to mean, goodbye?
What?
He said, I'm gay, and hung up.
I don't think Doug ever misses a chance to say that. That's what I think is going on there. Unbelievable with that guy, huh?
Well, you know something, man? Listen to that guy giving her a hard time. I think I have my respect.
Get it butt out. It's none of your beeswax.
Why don't you shut up? Hey.
Oh, yeah, man.
I'll throw a hand. I'll throw down.
No, you're not going to throw down. So, all right, fine. So we're going to get into this story without Doug, I guess.
He's back.
You know something? I'm getting real tired of these people calling back.
I'm sorry. Doug?
Listen, Phil, if you don't mind, I better not say it.
What were you going to say?
Yeah, what were you going to say?
I was going to say... But I didn't mean it racially, and I know you were going to take it racially.
What were you going to say?
I was going to ask Phil if he wouldn't mind keeping you on a leash. But I'm sure you're going to take that to mean some sort of a monkey thing.
Yeah, he probably would, right?
You know something, man? If you were here, you'd be there. You know what I mean by that?
If I was there, I'd be here.
No, if you were here, you'd be there.
What does that mean?
It means I would hit you so hard, you'd leave here, and you'd be back there.
Yee-hoo! That's hard, man. And then, yowie!
Shut your hole.
If anybody else hits anybody else...
You know what? I don't need this. I'm gay.
Well, you look like you're going to cry.
I think I am going to cry.
Mister, I don't want to make you cry or anything.
Just button up. Anything else happens in the show tonight, I'm going to walk out of here. That is a promise from me... to you. All right, where were we? Ah, yes. We've got about 2 minutes left in this segment from all the screwing around. You know what, Phil? I'm gay. Click.
Well, now I think he's hysterical.
Mr. Are you all right?
Phil, you okay?
Yeah, I'm fine. I'm fine. I'm just,
Well, you're good. I'm fine.
I'm just laughing at that ridiculous asinine exchange there. God almighty, Robert, you and Margaret and him, and you get into this big thing, and you're all members of a minority group, and you're yelling at each other, and blows me away. All right, of the top 10 teams in sports in terms of worth, value, number 10 is a soccer team called Arsenal. They're valued at $1.29 billion. They're owned by a guy named Stan Kroenke. Arsenal has won the second most FA Cups, just one fewer than Manchester United. Match day revenue of $150 million in 2011 was fourth highest among soccer teams. The Gunners, that's their nickname. Commercial revenue was $74 million in 2011, but got a boost last season due to new sponsorship agreements with Carlsberg and Betsson, the gaming company. Dig that, huh?
And this is, what is this again?
That's a soccer team.
That's a soccer team. Arsenal. And I believe Arsenal is located in London. When you hear these teams like Tottenham, Arsenal, Chelsea, there's about five pro soccer teams in London.
What? They only got two football teams in L.A.
They don't have no football in L.A.
Or where do they have two?
They've got two teams in New York. They got two in the Bay Area. I mean, the idea, in other words, of five teams in Los Angeles. But it's a different vibe, man. Soccer, football in England and the rest of Europe, the club followings are very intense. So that's number nine. That's number 10. The ninth most valuable team in all of sports, the New York Giants, the football team of the National Football League. The New York Giants are number nine. They're worth $1.3 billion. Of course, they're owned by John Mara, Steve Tisch. The Giants celebrated their second Super Bowl title in five seasons in February of 2012, led by Eli Manning. MetLife acquired naming rights to the new Meadowlands Stadium last year, filling a glaring hole.
What's wrong with you?
What?
You're all like...
I didn't do that. I went because I didn't know what the word was.
Well, it did sound like you were having a moment there. You went, and I said to Robert, I didn't mean this. I said, get a pan.
Yeah, I had to get a pan.
Get a pan for what?
Drool.
Oh, don't act like you don't know what we're saying.
Get a pan for drool. All right, let's take a break. I can't take it anymore.
I won't be laughed at, though.
I'm not laughing at you. I can't believe this show tonight. And right out of a three-day weekend, and we're starting out like this. We'll be right back. Phil Henry Show.
Truth is our bitch. The Phil Henry Durant Show. Brennan.
Read about the New York Giants, and nobody wants to listen to what I got to say. Welcome back here. All right, where are we? So we're working from number 10 to number 1, the most valuable sports franchises in the world. Now, I already gave you number 1 because it was a headline for several weeks. Manchester United is the most valuable sports franchise in the world, valued at somewhere in the... I'll give you the exact number when we get to it, but it's somewhere close to $4 billion, and this is a Premier League soccer team in England. So now we're working back. Number 10 was Arsenal. They're also a Premier League soccer team in England.
Yeah, you said Arsenal come from where?
They're from London. That's one of four or five London area soccer teams. Number nine is the New York Giants. Now, Arsenal was $1.29 billion. The New York Giants at number nine are valued at $1.3 billion. A lot of that money coming from a naming deal that they signed, that the Meadowlands signed with MetLife, which was around $7 million starting in 2010, but it's supposed to go up as high as $16 million a year over 25 years. And so that's stuff that, you know, you factor in when you're talking about a team's relative value. How much money have they got? How much money have they got to work with? The eighth most valuable team in the world is from Spain. It's Barcelona. Barcelona plays in the Spanish league. They're worth $1.31 billion. The owner of this team, it's interesting, says club members.
Club members, that's interesting.
Is that like a country club?
I don't know. I would think, if reading that, I'd say it was the team members, but that can't be. Barcelona has won, well, maybe it is.
Maybe that if you want to play for Barcelona, you have to buy part of the team.
Oh, that's great. So that means you're not necessarily getting the best play. You're not getting the best players, just getting guys, players with money? No. Barcelona has won two, and they're a good team. They've won two European Champion League titles over the past four seasons, riding the golden feet of Lionel Messi.
What's the European League?
It's the European League, man. What do you mean, what's the European League?
Yeah, but don't they play also in the Spain League?
Yeah, they play in a Spain league. They play in a UE. Here, let me see that for a minute.
Get at it. Don't grab it out of my hand.
That's what she said.
Hey, bud, you know.
That's what she said is so old.
Better get it in.
UEF, United Europe Federal. I don't know what the hell it is.
United Europe Federal ass.
Yeah, right. United Federal ass.
Bud, stop it. All right. The golden feet of Lionel Messi, Barca's home stadium, Camp Nou, Barcelona, has the biggest seating capacity of top European teams, 99,400. Wow.
Man, they got 99,000 people?
That's almost 100.
Yeah, no kidding.
That's a big, and they pack it, too, 99,000. The team's broadcasting revenue, get this. Their broadcasting revenue is $266 million. It was $266 million in 2011. God, that's $266 million in one season they're getting just from the broadcast rights.
Well, they love their football over there, whatever they call it. They call it the football. That was what I wanted. It's football.
Well, no, you said it was football.
No, what is wrong with you?
You did say that, Ms. Gray, instead of football.
Yeah, you said it like... You're having a stroke.
I'm not having a stroke. What did I say?
You said F-U-T-B-O-L.
Oh, yeah, the proper pronunciation, yes, is fut-bull or fut-bubble.
Fut-bubble.
Yes. Don't you laugh at me, damn you.
Margaret, you know, if I feel like laughing, I'm going to laugh. All right, that's number eight, Barcelona. They are worth $1.31 billion. They're owner club members. I wonder what that means. Must be maybe the team players. I don't know. The number seventh most valuable team in the world, the most seventh most valuable franchise in the world at $1.4 billion. Here's a little hint. It's owned by Robert Kraft. Who is it, bud?
It's owned by who?
Robert Kraft, worth $1.4 billion. They are the seventh most valuable franchise in the world.
It's Kraft. It's
like Kraft cheese.
Kraft cheese. That's not a team.
Well, they could be a sponsor.
No, Robert Kraft is. It's the New England Patriots.
I'd never have made the connection.
I'm sorry, Robert Kraft, the owner of the New England Patriots. The Patriots, the sixth most valuable. Did I say seven? Oh, they're tied. Aha. We had a couple of ties there, fans. That's why I made that mistake. The New England Patriots, I believe, are tied with somebody else. Yeah, they're tied with another team, so there is effectively no number seven, but they're the sixth most valuable team at $1.4 billion. The Patriots are one of the NFL's best-run organizations. They have sold out every game at Gillette Stadium since it opened in 2002. They made the playoffs eight of the past 9 years. Their quarterback is just the second quarterback after John Elway to lead his team to the Super Bowl five times. Brady's last trip to the Super Bowl ended in disappointment, of course, when they, last against the the New York Giants. But they are the sixth-ranked team in terms of value in the world. The other sixth-ranked team in terms of value in the world, tied with the Patriots, are our hometown team out here at the El Pacifico, the Los Angeles Dodgers.
The Dodgers.
Yes. The L.A. Dodgers are worth $1.4 billion. Frank McCourt sold the team in April through a bankruptcy court-led auction to Guggenheim Baseball for $2 billion. The deal included an additional $150 million to create a joint revenue with McCourt on the parking lots and the land around Dodger Stadium. The new ownership group includes L.A. Laker Magic Johnson, former president of the Atlanta Braves and Washington Nationals Stan Kasten, and film producer Peter Guber. Do you know him, Margaret?
Wasn't he the one that did... Barbara Streisand's hair. Isn't that who that is?
I don't know.
Well, there was a hairdresser, and Barbara Streisand fell in love with him, and that's all he needed. He got his mitts on her money. He started producing films. Then she dumped him, or he dumped her. But now he's a big shot. But at the very beginning, he was doing women's hair. And if you're talking Peter Guber, let's be honest. At the very, very beginning, he was doing some old lady's hair in a salon
Why are you smiling?
It just, it's one, this, the success story is marvelous.
Well, I don't know if Peter Goober is the guy you're talking about.
Yeah, it is. Peter Goober is the guy that did an old lady's hair.
Yeah, you're just saying that, man. You don't know.
Shut up, bud. All right, so Peter Goober and the partners financed most of the deal. The new group paid a record price for the franchise based on an impending new local TV deal. It's expected to be worth more than $3.5 billion in cash and equity. Number six, the Dodgers and the Patriots on this list of the most valuable sports franchises. Moving on now to number five of the most valuable teams in all of sports. This is the slowest thing, man.
That's your iPhone.
Is it really? Yes, it's my iPhone.
I'm just trying to help, Phil.
The number fifth most valuable team in all of sports, guess who? The Washington Redskins. Woo!
Yeah, I'm a district, man.
The Redskins are worth $1.56 billion. They're owned by Daniel Snyder. The Redskins have made the playoffs only three times since Dan Snyder bought the team in 1999. But who cares? That hasn't stopped the fans from flocking to FedEx Field and making the Skins the fifth most valuable team in recent in all of sports and making them very profitable in recent years. The Skins paid a king's ransom in April for three first-round draft picks and second-round draft choices in a trade with the St. Louis Rams for the right to select, you got it, Robert Griffin, and now he has a knee injury. All right.
Yeah, he'll get better, though.
Well, he will get better. All right, and then moving on, we got to get out of this bit. Number four on the list of the most valuable franchises, the Dallas Cowboys. The Dallas Cowboys, who are actually tied at number three with another team, the Cowboys master, Jerry Jones. They've attracted the NBA All-Star, the actual Jerry Jones is the master salesman. He's attracted the NBA All-Star game, the Super Bowl, the Manny Pacheco fight, soccer matches, concerts, and more to the Cowboys' new stadium since the $1.2 billion venue opened in 2009. So that stadium has brought a lot of money to the Dallas Cowboys.
That's the French, yes.
The Cowboys. All right, we'll be right back with numbers. Well, the other team tied with the Cowboys on up to number one of the most valuable sports franchises in the world on the world-famous Phil Hendry Show. Dallas Cowboys.
You said I like kebab.
Yes, but it's not...
Well, you do say it like kebab, the Dallas Cowboys.
But it's not kebab.
Phil Hendry.
The Phil Hendry Show. Welcome back here. World famous Phil Hendry Show online at philhendryshow.com. That's philhendryshow.com. If you've got a backstage pass, you can watch our live streaming video of the show. And we are now mobile on your iPhone. We are mobile on your iPad. We are mobile on a variety of devices. Your the iOS stream. Yeah. And it's looking good. It's a beautiful thing. And it's just kind of, you know, it's a, I don't know, what do you call it?
It's a milestone.
Yeah, it's a milestone of the broadcasting.
Yeah, it's a milestone of the broadcasting, Phil Hendry Show. We also, of course, have available to you, as well mobile as otherwise, our archives, which go back over a decade, close to 5,000 hours of archived radio material. And our radio show is universally recognized as one of the groundbreaking and one of the funniest in the history of, and funny not just in the material that we do on the air, but also funny that we just, you know, how did we get away, you know, why are we here? It's funny that Phil Hendry got away with this for the years that he did. All right, so what we're doing here is we're looking at the most valuable sports franchises. Harvey Weierman is joining us now from his offices in San Marino, California. You just left, Harvey. It's good to have you with us to talk about this. You've done a few sports deals over the years, have you not, Harvey?
I did the deal that eventually concluded the stadium deal between the Pittsburgh I forget the name, but it was a team, the Pittsburgh Paddle Pigs in a Pole. I forget the name, but they.
What sport did they play?
I forget the sport. It was, they're on ice skates.
Hockey.
Yes, it was the, what are they?
They're the Pittsburgh Penguin.
Well, not the Penguin, man, it's the Penguins.
The Pittsburgh Penguin. And
no, the Penguins.
It's the Penguins.
Well, no, this is the Pittsburgh Penguin, then. Is that different?
I'm sure it was the Pittsburgh Penguins.
No, it was a team called a Pittsburgh Penguin.
No, I'm sure. All right, well,
you know, I'm just telling you what I know. Now, and they were on skates.
That's hockey. There's a hockey team in Pittsburgh called the Pittsburgh Penguins.
All right, no, you've said that. The team that I negotiated on behalf of was called a Pittsburgh Penguin.
A team?
Yes, a team. Am I stuttering?
Well, all right, Harvey, I don't know.
All right, well, they had ice skates.
Okay, it was the hockey team.
No, how many times have I got to tell you it wasn't the hockey team?
Was it figure skating?
I think it was figure skating, yeah.
What?
Phil, you know, let me ask you a question, and I think your audience would agree. Have you got a hard time with the ears? Is there something going on? Do you need to clean out wax?
No, I don't need to clean out wax. You're on the show here telling me that you negotiated a stadium deal.
That's exactly correct.
For a sports franchise that skates called a Pittsburgh Penguin.
That's exactly right. Not the Pittsburgh Penguins, not plural like Dick Men said.
Good thing you finished that out, man, because...
Yeah, and all of a sudden you're going to call me a name.
All right, take it easy.
Well, I almost did. And it was a Pittsburgh Pen. I believe it was a figure skating team.
Wow, how do you... I don't understand that. I've never heard of a figure skating team.
Well, you know what, Phil? Consider this to be the night that you've heard of a figure skating team, because they didn't play hockey. They were on skates. And I swear on my mother's grave, all right? And I know exactly where that is. It's in my backyard. Now, do you understand?
Okay.
All right. That it was called a Pittsburgh Penguin, or it was a Pittsburgh Penguin night. You know what it was? It was called a Pittsburgh... Oh, I was looking at that. Let me see. Judy, bring me that program. Maybe it was the hockey team.
Oh, come on.
Well, I'm trying to... What is this? The program from when was this? All right, so this is the Pittsburgh Penguin night for you and the family. Okay, it was the Penguins. It was the hockey. Yeah.
Well, why did you say it was figure skating?
Who am I speaking with now?
Hey, don't worry about it. Why did you say figure skating?
Well, Margaret, if that's you, your voice changed.
It's Phil. Why did you say figure skating?
Because I thought it was, Phil.
Well, you were so adamant that it was not hockey. You said, no, it isn't hockey.
I didn't think it was hockey because I didn't think it was the Pittsburgh Penguins. It was a Pittsburgh Penguin. And now I realize I was taking that from an advertising line in a program.
So it was the hockey team?
I believe it was, yes. And don't give me this, are you senile? Because I'm not. I'm very specific. I keep meticulous records. Where is the, in fact, Judy? Yeah, no, keep her away from me. Keep Courtney. Keep the little girl away. I don't want one. No, honey, I don't need those big bozo glasses. Oh, God, I'm going to lose it if I get those again. I've got my regular glasses. All right, look, here it is, right here. In August, blah, blah, blah. I negotiated a deal, a long-term lease between the Pittsburgh Penguins of the National Hockey League and the downtown arena. And I can't give you the details because that's confidential. But I will tell you, Phil, that these deals can be very, very lucrative.
Yeah, if you can remember the team you're doing it for.
Why don't you shut up? You know something? You get to be my age, you'll understand, all right?
If I get to be your age, Mr. Wireman, I don't want to be your age.
Get a load of what that idiot just said. If he gets to be my age...
I heard what he said.
Can I finish? If he gets to be my age, he doesn't want to be my age. What do you think's going to happen? Someone's going to wave a magic wand over you and make you all of a sudden... Jeez, what a moron.
All right, but don't, you know, Mr. Wildman, I respect you, but, you know, you had that wrong. You should admit that.
Yeah, I admit I was wrong.
Oh, there you go. Well, thank you. So it was the Pittsburgh Penguins, it was the hockey team, and they are called the Pittsburgh Penguins, not a Pittsburgh Penguin.
Yeah, because you thought that's what it was.
I thought that's what it was because on the program it said a Pittsburgh Penguin night.
Yeah, I understand. You misread some advertising as the name of the team.
I'm very specific, Phil.
I don't know how, I've never, you know, I just don't know how you can do that. I don't know how you could say it's a Pitt, I've never heard of a team called a Pittsburgh Penguin.
Never heard of a team called a pig because there is no such team. What are you, stupid or something?
No, I'm not stupid.
Have you ever heard of a drink called a Pittsburgh Penguin?
No, I haven't.
Well, guess what? There is one because I just made it up and I'm going to make one.
What's in it?
I don't know yet, but I want to make a point. I want to prove a point to you that you can't, you never say, don't say never.
Never.
No, that's not what I mean. Don't ever say never. Don't ever say never.
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 What are they doing?
What are you guys doing?
Dad, don't ever say never.
Well, then why are you saying never?
Because he said don't ever say never. I just said never, so what's the downside?
The downside is that you're an idiot. That's the downside. What I'm saying is never say never because you...
Never!
Can I finish?
Would you shut...
You never say never because you... Forget it. I'm so...
All right, so that's caller... How many have we had hanging up tonight?
I think all three of your guests have hung up.
You guys are causing me more and more problems. You, Robert, you, Bud, you guys are a liability now. You know what that means?
Mm-mm.
It means I'm going to get rid of you. I'm going to get rid of you. I'm going to fire you off of this show. I'm going to get rid of you. We're going to go back to doing things completely different because you guys are now costing me guests. They're hanging up. They're getting pissed.
Dad, never say never.
If he said never say never, why did you say it?
Well,
why did you say it?
Because I wanted to see if something would happen.
If something would happen if you say never.
Yeah, you say never, I'm thinking, all right, well, there must be something that would happen if say never.
And what if it was really bad? What if a baby died? What if babies were killed every time you said the word never? See?
Phil, are you...
Will you just let me do this? So if he said never say never, and you guys go, never, 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 because you wanted to see what happened, what if the thing that happened was every time you said never... Babies were slaughtered somewhere in the world.
Well, I mean, what do you mean slaughtered?
They were just hundreds of babies died.
But like what? Put them in a
wood chipper?
Will you just... Well, let me do... Forget about how, just that babies died.
I wouldn't want to say it.
Yeah, I wouldn't say it.
So maybe if he said never say never, he was saying don't say never because babies might get slaughtered. And you idiots, because you just want to see what's going to happen, not thinking of the consequences, you just slaughtered a bunch of babies.
Well,
No. There's no going back on it now.
I didn't...
No, you slaughtered babies. You said never. How many times did you say never?
I didn't mean...
No, how many times did you say never?
Probably about five.
Five times babies were butchered alive in this country and all around the world.
I didn't mean to do it.
You didn't mean to do it, but you did it, didn't you?
Can't you get them back?
What do you mean get them back? Do I look like I can raise the dead?
It wouldn't be. You're going to raise the dead.
You're not raising them that far.
What do you mean I'm not raising them that far?
They're not that tall. If you raise them up.
Get out of here before I kick ass. They're not that tall.
That's all I'm saying, man, if they're going to stand up.
Babies can't walk, can they?
Maybe. If you can raise the dead, maybe you can make a baby walk.
Like earlier.
Get out of here. We'll be right back. We have an interesting story about a diamond heist. I'm losing... there's no blood in my head now. We'll be right back. World famous Phil Hendry Show.
Truth is our bitch. The Phil Hendry Show.
We were laughing whenever it was last week or the week before when North Korea produced a film, a phony film of New York City in smoldering ruins as the result of something, a nuclear attack. I think they were trying to sell this to their people. But and of course, we were laughing. But I just saw, and forgive me for not really being up to speed on this, because every time I see the words Red Dawn, I think of the Patrick Swayze one, you know.
No, this was a new one.
Yeah, I didn't know. And Red Dawn was remade. Which to me is the same as producing a movie with a little train set that makes it look like New York is burning. I mean, who cares, you know?
Yeah, the North Koreans was invading.
Oh, the North Koreans were invading, huh? Well, there's... Now that is... I can buy that premise. That's even more believable than Cuba invading. Cuba invading and taking over America. Because that was the original Red Dawn.
The original Red Dawn... No, the original Red Dawn was Cuba and... Russia.
Yes, the Soviet Union, you're right.
Yeah, the Soviet Union and Cuba. In the new Red Dawn, I think it's China, you know, and North Korea.
Well, whatever. I mean, it's preposterous. It's preposterous.
Why do you say it's preposterous? I mean, why wouldn't it?
I think it's a very daunting. I think we have established that, and this was frankly something that the Japanese actually considered invading the United States. The Japanese considered invading the United States. Even the Germans didn't consider invading the United States. All the Germans wanted to do was just wreak all kinds of havoc over here. They wanted to blow up buildings and stuff. But to actually invade, the Japanese considered it and realized that it was nigh on to an impossible task. And it's often quoted that one of the ministers, it might even have been Yamamoto himself, the admiral, said, you know, every American owns a gun, that kind of thing. Well, that wasn't really the biggest concern of the Japanese. The biggest concern of the Japanese was the sheer size of the country. And geographically, where Japan is located, it would be a west-to-east invasion. So there was this enormous amount of geography to conquer before you even got to the major population centers. Just, it's impossible. Now, this, of course, was during a time when paratroopers and airborne troops were just beginning to be used. World War II. But even if they'd had airborne troops proficient, developed, and say, I don't know how many you could possibly train, you know, but you'd have to have tens of thousands. Where the hell are you going to drop that? I mean, what do you think you're going to do, man?
Well, what about the fact because the soldiers, the American soldiers were over there and the Japanese would be here. So they'd be...
Yeah, they'd miss them. The Americans go over and invade, or not invade, but they're over like in Guadalcanal.
Yeah.
And they're there, and the Japanese snuck around and came in here.
What about that?
I don't know what you mean by the Japanese snuck around.
Well, if the Japanese are invading here and our soldiers went over to the Guadalcanal, then we're there and they're here.
I don't think either of the militaries are that stupid. That, what?
It's possible.
No, it's not pot. There'd be too many troops here to defending our country. Even if we had just a reserve force in the United States, yeah, they stood no chance. There's not a chance in hell, man. Look what happened to the Germans when they tried to invade Russia. Do you think anything different would happen if somebody tried to invade the United States? And the double problem is you've got these two enormous oceans. So anyone trying to invade this country needs some kind. You got to have airborne, and you've got to have amphibious or some kind of navy that will allow you to do it. And if somebody said to me, okay, Mr. Hendry, you have the, let's say, the Chinese army, okay?
Yeah, the Chinese army, they'd do it in an instant.
No, they wouldn't, just because they're Chinese.
It's not about them being Chinese. It's the numbers of people.
Well, them being Chinese, too, would help because they're smarter.
Oh, are they smarter? Let me just ask something, man. I'm in charge of the Chinese forces, and they say, Hendry, it's your job to invade America. What's the first thing you can do? The first thing I'm thinking of doing is pummeling the country with all kinds of nuclear weapons.
Well, let's say you couldn't use nuclear weapons. They forbade that.
Oh, they forbade it.
What's that mean?
They forbade it.
Forbade?
It means they didn't allow it.
Why wouldn't they allow it?
Well, it's possible Chinese would say, we don't want to drop nuclear weapons because that would be a cluster, you know. I mean, if you'll pardon the expression, the fallout would be just, you know.
Well, the public relations fallout.
Yeah. But I would still just use all kinds of, I would use the air thing, man. I would bomb the hell out of every single airfield, every single place where there is any kind of ICBM capability. I would just, that's the first thing I'd do. And it would probably take, if it took a month, I don't know how long it would take. But wherever the hell the troops were going to go in, I'd bomb the hell out of that. Then the next thing you use is airborne troops. And maybe with some amphibious, but you use airborne.
What does that mean?
Means they're up in the air?
Yeah, it means they're up in the air. What does it mean?
Well, they can't fly.
Who said they know how to fly? Hey, do we got a break, Dan? Oh, we're good. I'm looking at the wrong clock here. It says 52. We already took a break?
Oh, my God, he's having a stroke.
I'm not having a stroke.
We just took the break.
Okay. Let's talk to General Galen Shaw. He is on the line here, and we'll get a little bit of the strategy involved in what you do when it is a an operation the size of invading an America. I don't think that we've ever really talked about that. General Shaw, how are you?
Phil, I'm doing very well, and a very pleasant good evening to you and to everyone out there.
Hey, General Shaw, it's Bud Dickman.
Bud, how are you?
It's Robert, General Shaw.
Robert, very good to talk with you, and Margaret Gray.
Yes, General, what we're talking about is, if the Chinese invaded America, how would they do it?
Well, it certainly is something that is conceptualized down through the years at the very highest levels of the United States military. As you might imagine, Margaret, and Phil, and Robert, and Bud, and all of the people at home, this is the job of the planning boards of each of the armed forces. Now, we have war books. And what a war book is, it is the contingent plan of attack or defense for all of the regions of the world. Here in the United States, of course, we have a war book for the United States. If the Chinese were to try to invade the United States, the thing that I would do is I would... It's difficult to imagine this, and it's difficult for me not to be emotional, but I would wipe them out. I would wipe them out before they even tried anything so stupid. And
But how would you wipe them out?
The Chinese invading the United States would be one of the stupidest things that they have ever... And that's a country that's done some dumb things. Can you imagine a country with supposedly very intelligent people and they've let people run them roughshod?
Well, that's... General, we're trying to find out, though, the military plan.
What's the military plan? If the Chinese were going to invade America...
I would kill every last one of them. I'd kill every yellow...
Well, General Shaw...
General, let's not...
You're asking me a very emotional question, all right? And I'd be... Just to quote Christopher Walken, if these lousy yellow... It's a very...
Well, can you answer this question or not? Can you give it to us in a clinical, military, operational... thing.
Yes, I can. Here is the operational plan. I'll wipe out every...
I don't think you can...
You're really emotional about this.
Yes. When it comes to China invading America, the gall. You're telling me there's going to be a half a million to a million, and quite possibly a million and a half... Okay, I'll say it. A million and a half bull haircuts coming ashore... And I'm not allowed to get angry? I will check.
General, thank you very much. We're at the end of the hour.
All right. Well, there's my plan. I'll wipe out every bull.
He got pissed off.
Yeah. Yeah, I think he did.
You know, if you're in the military and you're asked a question, how would you do it? Don't get emotional. Tell us how you do it.
Well, he said he'd wipe out every bull haircut, and I want to apologize to all of our Chinese listeners listening tonight over Armed Forces, well, not Armed Forces Radio, but...
On China Radio.
Yeah, to all of our Chinese listeners on China Radio, we're sorry.
Phil Hendry.
I'm not sorry. I'm American. I don't care.
Pacifico, Phil Hendry.
Back to the old Pacifico we are here, the Phil Hendry Show. Until 1 o'clock on the West Coast, 4 a.m. on the East Coast, truth is our bitch. And, you know, do we really own the truth? Our version of it, whatever that is. It's very catchy. Welcome to the show, and of course, welcome to our online viewers of Phil TV. We have a live video cast of our show every night. And we also have, as well, a backstage pass available to our videocast viewers, which allows them access to every single solitary piece of audio that we have ever done that we can get our hands on since about 1997. So that's a lot. Now, I was talking to Joel McHale, who's a terrific guy, and during the Bobby Dooley podcast, he says he used to record our show.
Joel McHale did?
Yeah, he recorded our show when he came out to L.A., and another guy that recorded our show is Matt Groening, and I've mentioned that. Now, if I could get a hold of all the tape that these guys have got, we would have a an amazing, because there's it's a few months that are missing from the early part of 97. We were just local. Nonetheless, the highest quality audio, the best copies of the shows, original master tapes of the shows are available at philhendryshow.com. So get a backstage pass. It's the best possible value that you could possibly get online. And, you know, I saw an interesting, very, very interesting online clip that somebody sent to me. And it's Harlan Ellison. Do you know who this is?
Well, he's the science fiction writer.
Yeah. Harlan Ellison is not just a science fiction writer. He is a raconteur. He is a social critic. He's, but more than anything else, the guy is very funny to listen to. He's very funny to hear the stories that he has working in Hollywood. Now, Harlan Ellison's a science fiction writer and was writing short stories. Yes, I belched, bud.
Well, yeah, I just want to point it out.
Is that your job, pointing out when I belch?
Yeah, what is that, bud?
Well,
yeah, just take it easy, okay? If I pointed out everything that you did that was socially untoward or socially unacceptable, we would never, that's all we talk about for weeks. Harlan Ellison was a science fiction writer. And gradually, being a successful science fiction writer, he was hired by different entities in Hollywood to write different on different projects. One of the earliest was Star Trek. Harlan Ellison was the author of a number of episodes of Star Trek, some very, very well known. He didn't mention any, but when I was looking at the biography attached to the clip that I saw, there was a Star Trek. He also authored, and I didn't know this, one of the all-time best Outer Limits episodes ever.
Oh, I can't. Which one is this?
This the one where the bugs from space was convicts?
No. That was a good one. Harlan Ellison authored one of the greatest Outer Limits episodes ever. It was, I don't know what it was called, but it was Robert Culp, the late actor who was in I Spy and a number of films that you'll recognize him from. And Robert Culp plays the last man, I think, on Earth. And he is running to evade capture by an alien entity that has taken over Earth. And what has happened was this man is the last man on Earth, but he has a glass hand.
Oh, I know this one.
What is it?
Hold on. He has a glass hand. It's a prosthetic hand. He might even be a robot himself, I'm not sure. But on a wire, in this glass hand, imprinted on this wire, is essentially the electric information, somehow imprinted on this wire, is the information for every man, woman, and child on Earth.
And he has every human being on Earth on this wire.
How's that possible?
It's, but just be quiet, you know?
Well, it's like the electro signature.
Yes, Robert, very good word. The signature, the electronic, the electromagnetic, whatever signature of every human being is on this wire. And so Harlan Ellison authored this, and I remember this to this day as a kid watching this episode. It was fantastic. And the entire episode is this guy, this man, Culp, running, trying to escape from these beings that have taken over Earth. And he has literally in his possession the well-being of every human on the planet. Really, really terrific. So Ellison, this is what he did. And he also was one of the early writers on the first Star Trek movie. And he told a very funny story. He said, Gene Roddenberry said to them, it was not big enough. It's not big enough. Make it bigger. Make it bigger. He says, Gene, we're blowing up the universe. What more do you want? You know. But he was on this clip talking about being a writer. And you got to watch it. I can't play it for you because there's some, you know, profanity and so forth. But he's essentially saying, I got a call today, he said, and it was from some film company in the Valley that wanted to use an interview that was done of me for Babylon 5. Apparently, he also was one of the writers on the original, Babylon 5. And he said, fine, sure, you can use the interview, just pay me. And that began his diatribe as to what happened. When he said, pay me, meaning if you're going to use my image on your film, on your little wraparound or whatever, the promotional film for the Babylon 5, yes, you may use it, but you pay me. And the person on the other end of the phone said, well, a lot of people are doing it for free. He says, everybody else may be stupid, but I'm not. And Ellison's whole point was that writers get screwed, that stuff is used and they're not paid for that stuff, that their images are used, they're not paid for it. And it was great. It was so good that I posted it on my Facebook page, and it speaks exactly and entirely for me.
And what you're not a writer.
I'm not a writer. I know I'm not a writer.
What you got to do with that?
I'm talking about the stuff that we do on the show, you know, things that I've done, things, my voice, whatever. It's about giving away the work of performers and writers, the people that run the show, the managers, the owners of the companies who just give this stuff away, or they give it away for practically nothing, and you never wind up getting paid for any of it. That's what's going on today. And I got to tell you something. I'm all in favor of amateurs. And when I say amateur, I don't mean that in a denigrating way. I don't mean that in an insulting way. When I just say that non-professionals, I'm all in favor of non-professionals involving themselves in media or whatever the profession is. I mean, I can't really speak for doctors, you know.
Well, I...
You know, I don't want to see an amateur, you know, but if you want to try it, there's probably some limits to what you're able to do as an amateur in the medical field, you know. But I'm all in favor. You know, you want to make a movie, you want to do a radio show. That's fine. That's fine. But understand what you're doing. You're cheapening the market for professionals that have worked for years. So I would simply say this: I know that you want to have your work seen, and I think that that's admirable, and I think it's necessary, and you should. But there has you need to hold a line someplace and say, after this point, I get paid. Now, Arianna Huffington made a big thing. You remember this, Margaret?
Well, she didn't want to pay the bloggers.
Yeah. The bloggers said, we'd like to be paid. And she laughed. Essentially, she laughed in their faces and she said, ha 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 ha, I'm giving you promotion. Now, that goes over really well with people that don't know what they're talking about. Anybody that says that, hey, the promotional value of being in an Arianna Huffington, you know, is just one. I don't care who you are, and I don't care how many years you've been writing, and I don't. You don't know your ass from a hole in the ground. You know what you're talking about. You may well know that you're even lying, you may know that you're stupid. I don't know, but you don't know what you're talking about. There's no promotional value in it at all, and I don't care how many anecdotal stories somebody's going to tell me about, well, I know a guy that got hired because his...
Well, what do you say to that? If you do know someone that got hired...
I don't care. The percentage of guys getting hired off of some blog they wrote for Arianna Huffington is almost not, it doesn't even register. It's not even on the charts. It just doesn't happen in sufficient numbers to justify saying, hey, I worked for free, but it really helped me eventually get a career. Doesn't happen. Now, there are people that get careers. There are people that get careers by, you know, going for the, you know, getting a job. You know, they send, I don't know, they send their tape in and they get hired. They send their writing in, they get hired. That happens, yeah. But that's a job application.
Yeah, it's free.
Yes. But nobody is using that. No one's using that, putting that in their magazine and saying, you know what, you get promotional value. There's a reason why Arianna Huffington uses all those submissions. If she's laughing at those people and saying, ha, 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 you know, you get great promotional value, then people can turn around and look at her and say, why, by the way, are you using all this work? Why do you publish all of these people that you laugh at who want to be paid? Well, you can say, well, she's saving money. She's saving money. But, I mean, crap, even if it's free, is still crap. So what are you talking about? You're talking about good writing. People read it. It represents a point of view that people want to see. It represents some creativity. It has value, and she's putting it into her magazine, and she's getting it for free, and she's laughing at people who want to be paid. There's something wrong with the picture, and the picture is called, you writers that do it and you guys that give it up for free, you're idiots, you're getting screwed, and you're cheapening it for everybody else. That's all there is to it. And I say the same thing to anybody in my business. If you voice track music for 500 radio stations for Jack Ball Broadcasting Incorporated, the big ass company, and they say to you, hey, why don't you go in the booth and voice track and we'll use your voice on 500 radio stations and we'll pay you $250 extra a month. If you settle for that, you have just screwed so many more people than you can possibly think of. You've screwed professionals all over the country. Management in radio, just like in every other business, wants to keep their overhead low, and they want to keep the productivity high. They want to be able to use and make money, and they don't want to have to pay for it, not if they can help it. And radio is no different than any other business. In fact, my business is probably cheaper and more usurious and more, if you will, they probably rob people that work for them more than any other business I can think of, the broadcasting business. I know I'm not supposed to say this.
Well, you're saying it, Phil, and you're biting the hand that feeds you.
Wait. What feeds me? You mean I'm biting the hand that starves me? That's what I'm biting. All right, we'll be right back.
Yeah, I'm not starving you, man. You just had to lose 90 pounds.
Yeah, how'd you get all the weight if they're starved? You quit breathing on me, bud. Maybe I made all that money doing something other than this. We'll be right back. World famous Phil Hendry Show.
Truth is our bitch. The Phil Hendry Show.
Gotta love that popcorn, yo.
You eat a lot of that.
I do eat a lot. I'm sorry, I got my mouth full of popcorn. Popcorn is the popcorn that I eat. 100 calories a bag. It's the Orville Redenbacher. Why do I eat it? Well, because for those of you who have just joined the show, or maybe not too long with our show, I lost between March of 2012 and March 19th of 2012 to October 31st of 2012, I lost 80 pounds from 289 down to 210. So it's about 79 pounds, is that it?
Yeah. No. 79.
79 pounds. 80 pounds. So a lot of things have been happening. And the weight that I lost, which was an enormous amount of weight, I did it by watching calories. I did 2,000 calories a day. I really thought I was doing something special. Now I'm talking to my son, Alex, who's on a diet. He's a weightlifter, and he's a young guy. He's 25 years old. This dude is eating 1,650 calories a day, and I think that that's pretty, like, amazing. Then I talked to another friend of mine, female, yes, but nonetheless, she's doing 900 calories.
What?
No, that's... No, you're kidding.
No, I'm not kidding. 900 calories a day.
That is not healthy. I don't think... Even for a woman.
Well, you know, she's a small... I don't know if she's a little woman or not. When you say small, you mean thin, or do you mean...
I'm just saying 900 calories a day is not healthy.
How many calories a day do you eat?
Yeah, Margaret, how many calories do you eat? Is it probably 3,000 or...
Bud, shut up. Everybody knows you're trying to be insulting.
I'm going to take you, Bud, and I'm going to show you exactly how they make pretzels at that factory. You remember when you were asking about that?
No.
You were. I'm going to show you how those pretzels are made. The warm ones. The warm ones.
Wow. All right. So in any event.
No, I don't eat a lot, and I probably don't eat much more than a couple of thousand. I was on 1,500 calories a day because I was mirroring Frank's diabetes diet.
I didn't know Frank's diabetic.
Well, it was just a diet situation. It wasn't juvenile, or it wasn't the diabetes you're born with. I don't know what it's called.
Juvenile diabetes?
I think so. I don't know. I don't know why they called it that.
Why did they call it that?
I just said I don't know why.
So Frank's 1,500 a day, and that's what you were doing.
Yes, I was pretty much doing the same. And Jason is a little boy, and he eats whatever he eats. We're not doling out the calories to him.
How much would you say? Does he? I mean, he's a young kid. He's an athlete, right?
Jason plays sports. Yes.
All right. What would you say he eats? Can you give me a typical?
Jason is a typical young man. I mean, he'll sit down to about three or four bowls of cereal. Or you know, and I'll tell him, don't eat that many bowls of cereal. Don't. But then he brings out the quart of milk. He'll sit down with a full quart of milk and the box of cereal.
Well, that sounds about right. I guess that's what most guys do, you know.
Yeah, I'll sit down, box of cereal.
Well, what are you sitting down with?
Well, I'm sitting around with a box of cereal.
Well, he'll sit down with a box of the... Bran, I say to him, you only eat brands, the brands and the what is the
Are you talking like Special K?
Well, and the Count Chocula.
Count Chocula is sugar.
Well, I don't know, but
I'll sit down with a Count Chocula.
Yeah, that's real great.
Yeah, who cares? So.
Well, I do too. I'll sit on Count Chocula or Fruity Pebble.
The Fruity Pebble.
Fruity Pebbles. Okay, well, whatever. All right, so, and what about for dinner?
He'll have 3 or 4 hamburgers. He'll have 3 or 4 helpings of potatoes au gratin, or the scalloped potatoes that I make that he loves so very much. He'll have 2 or 3 helpings of the cob, or cobbler.
Is that cobbler?
Are you asking me what I serve?
Yes.
Then I'm giving it to you the way that I say it. Let me start all over again. He has 3 or 4 hamburgers. He'll have the potatoes au gratin, or the scalloped potatoes. And then he'll possibly have some of the cobbler, peach, or apple. What are you doing, Phil? You're nervous with that paper. Do you need to wipe?
What do you mean, peach or apple? Is it cobbler?
I think I said cobbler.
You said apple, cobbler. So, forget it. All right.
Peach cobbler, and then he'll have 3, 4, 5 scoops of ice cream. Why? Why do you ask?
I'm just wondering what he eats.
You're living vicariously, Mr. Henry. You want to have some of that?
Yeah, you're living vicariously through the kid.
Do you want to come over to the house? I'll get you. You can have some of the peach cobbler.
And 3 or 4 or 5 scoops of ice cream, huh?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. And he'll have the ice cream. He'll have the... Some nights he loves to have the Rocky Road.
That's weird.
Why is that? Don't start with that.
Why is Rocky Road weird?
Because it is reminiscent.
See, he started in on this the other day, and it made me nauseous. He was saying, doesn't it remind you of something? And I said, no, not by a long shot.
I love Rocky Road ice cream.
What?
Man, Rocky Road's bad.
No, you know what? That's good. Fine. Great. If you hate Rocky Road, that means all the more for me, man, because I love Rocky Road ice cream, and I haven't had any in so long.
Well, what do you have for dessert?
I don't have dessert, man. I've been on a freaking diet. Now, when I went went off the diet during the holiday season, I told you guys, I was eating chocolate. I don't know why, but chocolate, I just got into chocolate, you know? I had to have chocolate. Chocolate bars, chocolate candy bars, chocolate Reese's. Hershey's, you know, Three Musketeers, just...
What is that about?
I don't know. I have no idea. I have no idea. I love it, and I know I've got an allergy to it, because if I eat enough of that stuff, I got to drop 3 or 4 Advil.
But that's crazy, man. You're going to eat chocolate, then you're going to get your head.
Yeah, your head will blow up, and it'll go, what happened? You go, I love chocolate, and meanwhile, you got a brain tumor.
It's not a brain tumor. It's a tension headache. What happens if I eat enough chocolate, it goes right into the neck and my shoulders.
What does?
The chocolate.
Well, not literally.
No, not literally. The sugar, the residual of the chocolate, whatever it is that I'm allergic to, goes right to my neck, and I get a headache like you wouldn't believe. I got a headache when I was in Atlanta. I don't know what it was. I had a banana split or something. It had that chocolate syrup on it.
Yeah.
And I ate that. I had the worst headache, man. I had, like, lasted for a day. I couldn't believe it, man. I was like, I must have eaten a whole bottle of Bayer aspirin, you know, and then started in on Excedrin. And all of that stuff happens to me, and yet I still love chocolate. What is going on there? I think it's almost like a heroin addiction. All right, we're coming back here with the story of the diamond heist in Belgium when we return to the world-famous Phil Hendry Show.
What is going on with you that you eat chocolate and then you have a...
I get a headache, like a migraine headache.
What?
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 Phil Hendry.
Berman joins us here on the world-famous Phil Hendry Show. Don was listening to us here. We're just talking, reminiscing. Actually, not reminiscing, because Dan was discussing confectioners, and then it got into Knott's Berry Farm. And what we were talking about is this chocolate addiction that I had, Don.
I heard that, and I want to tell you, Phil, I can remember, I'm not much older than you, but I do remember when the Knott's family owned Knott's Berry Farm.
Right.
And that was down in Buena Park, where our good friend, I know you know Bob Green, I've shopped at Bob's stores, and he and I have done a couple of real estate deals together, which I, you know, I don't mean to bring that up, but it was not very good, but...
Wait, you did real estate deals with Bob?
I did, yeah, a couple of real estate deals that fell, that were not too... And if Bob, if you're listening, I don't mean anything by that. I just, I suppose what I would say, if Bob is listening, I would say that I'm, I expect to get, well, I shouldn't bring this up on your show.
Yeah, if it's business...
I just expect to get payment at some point. But the point that I wanted to make...
Yeah, if it's business, you should just talk to him.
I will do that. I just thought if he was listening, you know, it would be nice to get some. I don't care how much it is. It could be a dollar. It could be 50 cents. Just my end of the money. But the reason why I'm calling you, Phil.
See, all right, go ahead.
The reason why I'm calling you is you what? What were you going
to
say?
I just I think these are business matters you can keep to yourself.
Absolutely. I'm simply saying that if Mr. Green, because I'm on the air in Southern California, and I'm going to talk about Buena Park, you know, the Knott's Berry Farm in Buena Park. All right.
All right, and let's just end it there, if you don't mind.
Fine. What I was going to say, so I can't even say that Bob Green.
I would rather, you can say whatever you want, Don. You're a friend.
I appreciate that.
But I would rather that you say it to him directly.
All right. The only one thing I want to say, if you've got any amount, if 50 cents a quarter, Bob, please send it because I haven't gotten my end of the real estate deal. That's all I want to say.
Okay.
Phil, I am one of the, I do remember when the Knott's family owned Knott's Berry Farm, and this is why I wanted to bring this up with you. I have had and I have battled over the course of many years a weight problem like yourself. I don't think I've been quite as successful in battling the weight issue as you have most recently, and my hat's off to you, Phil. I think that's very good.
Thank you.
When my family started going to Buena Park and to Knott's Berry Farm, the Knott's family was owning it, and Mrs. Knott's, old lady Knott's as we called her, she was holding forth in her kitchen. Now, a lot of people may not know this about Knott's Berry Farm, but it started as a place where people... would stop to get their preserves, so the Knott's Berry Farm, see? It was a berry farm, so they would get preserves, or they would get apple pies, or they would get cherry pies. And while they waited for the pie, Mrs. Knott's served chicken dinners. So that's how the restaurant started.
Okay, so I see. So they would stop and get these cherry pies and berry pies.
Yeah, berry pies, Knott's Berry Farm, and she would make chicken dinners. Well, as they waited for the chicken dinners, old man Knott's, Mr. Knott's.
Do you remember what their names were?
Yeah, Mr. Knott's was, I'm going to say, I want to say that his name was Hal or Ned. And I want to say that Mrs. Knott's was... Shirley or Betty, I don't know.
Sure, so we don't know, huh?
No, I think her name was, well, her name was, you know, Mrs. Knott's. It was a joke, but, we all knew her as Old Lady Knott's, and we knew him as sometimes we knew him as Old Lady Knott's, only as, you know, as a joke, but he was Old Man Knott's, and the Old Lady Knott's part, Phil, for Old Man Knott's, was there were some whispers. And I don't think they were true at all. But you know the 50s in America and how prejudiced things were. There were some whispers about Mr. Knott's, and so they would say, oh, there goes Old Lady Knott's number two.
Whispers about what?
Well, I think you can imagine.
Well, are you talking about cross-dressing? Or?
No, not cross-dressing. No, I'm saying Old Lady. Use your imagination for...
Gay.
I would think so.
Well, we don't know that that's true, folks.
No, we don't know if it's true, but... Okay.
Yeah, we don't know that it's true. So, getting to the part of Old Lady Knott's, as you call her...
I call her that. I think everybody called her Old Lady Knott's.
What was her name?
I don't know. Betty or Jean or something. Mary? I don't... You know, take your pick.
She was. It was the 1950s. What kind of a name do you think they had back then? Betty Sue, Mary Lou, Peggy Doo, Boo Boo Boo. I don't know.
Well, but she was born in the 19th century, so her name wouldn't be Peggy Sue.
Well, then what would it be?
Well, it could be Matilda or something 19th century-esque.
All right. 19th century. Jane? Calamity Jane? I don't know. It could have been Gertrude or whatever you want to call it. So Old Lady Knots would make these pies. Now, I can remember sitting and waiting for a Knott's Berry Farm pie. That's how good they were. You would sit and you'd wait. And they'd say, well, do you want to have a chicken dinner? I'd say, no, thank you. Do you want to take a ride on the mule team? Because by that point, Old Man Knots had the mule team. He had the...
Didn't they have Panning for Gold?
Yeah, Panning for Gold. They had, and they had the ghost town.
Okay. And he built these things as amusements for people who were waiting for their chicken dinners and their...
Yeah, and their pies, their berry pies. And then, of course, things got a little dicey there when the big business was pie. And now you have an old west town, and one of the things is a saloon. And there was a church group that had some problem with the idea that maybe Knott's Berry Farm was simulating a brothel.
Right, just because they had pie?
Yeah, I don't really want to go down that road.
Okay, let's not talk about that, okay?
Right, so in any event, I'm sitting there, and I would wait for these pies, and they sometimes took all day. And you would wait, and you'd wait, and you'd wait. And the old man, Knots, would say, do you want to go get a chicken dinner? And I'd say, no. And,
what do you mean, go get one? You're standing right there.
Well, you know what I mean. You want to come in for a chicken dinner? I'd say, no, I don't want a chicken dinner. By this point, Phil, I was 19 years old. I already am very large, and I tend to carry a lot of weight in my butt and in my hips. So I started, and it's unfortunate, but as a young man, I looked a lot like a woman. Do you understand what I'm saying?
No, I don't.
No, you don't. Well.
You mean the way you carried the weight?
You had a lot of weight on your butt?
Yes, I had almost a woman's butt. And that got a lot of insult from a lot of these truck drivers that would stop and dump off supplies for the pie making. Now,
this story is, you know.
You're telling me it's weird? I lived it. So I'm down there at Knott's Berry Farm with a big rear end. I'm sorry, I had to cough.
Uh-huh.
Well, I can stop the story if you want.
No, go ahead. I mean, but I'll tell you, it's a lot longer than I thought it would be.
Oh, well, I'm so sorry to bore you.
No, you're not boring me. You're not boring me at all, Don. I thought you were going to tell me about Old Lady Knots, as you called her, making the pies.
Yes, am I telling you about a pie or am I not?
You're talking about a brothel.
I got sidetracked, all right? I'm sorry. So I'm waiting for these pies. The reason why my rear end got big is because of the pie. And then I'm sitting on it waiting for another pie. It got to the point in that summer, and I'll never forget that, I call it that summer of 1963, when I sat and I waited chicken dinners. I must have eaten, I don't know, how many days are in a summer? How many days are in, it was almost like a romantic summer, only I didn't have a woman. I had pies and a chicken and bones on a plate, but it was romantic. So finally,
following this story is very confusing. What are you trying to say?
I'm trying to say that Old Lady Knots made good pies, I guess.
Okay, well, you could have said that, you know, without getting into a whole thing about how, you know, the summer of 64. And
well, did you want to hear the story or didn't you?
Well, what's the upshot of the story? Okay, that's a clean sweep.
That's it. Every single guest tonight.
Clean sweep.
Hey!
Every guest tonight is hung up on us.
Yeah, but you were kind of rude to him.
No, I was not. No, I wasn't rude to him.
I don't think he was rude.
Well, he's talking about...
Hey, Robert, the host of the show said...
Why don't you shut up, man?
Well, hold on.
Every time he's talking about pie, you were saying, hey, it's weird, you know?
No, I didn't, Robert. I said... The only thing I said was, when are you going to get to the point?
He was getting to the point, man. You didn't let him finish.
No, I don't think so. I don't think so.
Yeah.
No, I don't think so. I kept saying to him, oh, well, you know. And he's getting sidetracked about a whorehouse. He got sidetracked about his ass. He got...
the freaking truck drivers who dumped off the pie-making stuff.
Well, see, that's an insulting part right there.
I didn't say it. He did. Then he says to me, some other jazz, I forget what. And I said, okay, get to the point. What? Well, that she makes great pies. Well, no kidding, man. We know that old lady not. And that was another thing. What's her name? Judy Susie. Oh, man.
Well, I think, Phil, when you laugh at people, though, it really hurts them.
Well, Margaret, I've got only one thing to say. Then they shouldn't come on the show, because I got more weird asses that come on here with the weird stuff that they say, and you're telling me I can't laugh? You got to be kidding. I've heard you guys laughing at stuff.
We laugh at you, and I think that's acceptable because you're the host of the show.
Yeah, and you need deflating, like Ms. Gray said.
Yes, you need deflating.
Oh, I need deflating. Oh, okay. Well, you know, that's all right. I won't begrudge you that, but I will tell you.
Yeah, you do. You always tell me don't laugh.
No, but I'm always telling you don't go, yeah. I'm telling you don't do that.
Yeah, that drives everybody crazy.
I'm not talking to you.
Okay, we're done talking about this. We're going to take a break. It's the world-famous Phil Henry Show. And I still haven't talked about the damn Belgian diamond heist, so we're going to do that when we come back. I swear. Or know the reason why. The world-famous Phil Henry Show.
Truth is our bitch. The Phil Henry Show.
Am I back on yet? Hello, am I back on? So yes, my ass got big.
Listening to the world-famous Phil Henry Show.
And welcome back here to the world-famous Phil Henry Show. And don't forget, after the show, you can go over to philhenryshow.com, check our program log. We have a show log every single show. We post there for you what was heard and what wasn't and what could have been. It's right there in our show log. And you'll also be able to check other news that's breaking here from the Phil Henry Show. And as I say, as we've been able to present to you now over the last couple of weeks the streaming for your Apple and other devices, your iOS stream, as we like to call it. We are going to begin to expand our efforts out into other areas of the website promotionally now. There's nothing having to do with maintenance, nothing having to do with development. We've got our website where we want it to be right now. We have to obviously add a lot of our show logs again, but there's going to be a lot of fun things that we're going to involve you guys in over there at philhenryshow.com. All right, dig this. The Belgian job is what the police are calling it. Armed robbers snatch 32 million pounds worth of diamonds in just 3 minutes in a daring Brussels airport heist. 32 million pounds, probably in the neighborhood of $50 million. Maybe more, 60. Eight men cut a hole in a security fence and burst through in fake police cars. Gang, armed with machine guns, seized gems without firing a shot. The robbers sped off through the same gap in the fence just a few minutes later. It is thought the stones belong to diamond and gold traders in Antwerp, which is in Holland. And Holland and the Dutch themselves known for centuries as diamond and gem traders. In fact, if you go to the Dutch Antilles in the Caribbean, people go down there for vacation. People go down there. They get off on cruise ships. They want to go into the Dutch Antilles because that's where they get the deals on, you know, diamonds.
Well, you can get wristwatches and things like that. But the Dutch are they drive a hard bargain. And you know, I love the Dutch, but when I go diamond hunting or I go gem shopping and I visit any Dutch person. I've gotten to the point, Phil, it's really funny. You remember Vandy Camps, the old coffee shop?
Vandy Camps was kind of like a Dutch theme.
Yeah, Dutch theme. I hated going in there. And there wasn't one person in there was really Dutch. But they had a windmill. You remember the windmill?
Yeah, I remember the windmill on a Denny's.
That windmill on that Denny's is a windmill from when it was a Vandy Camps. So you hate the Dutch.
I don't hate them. But I've got a physical revulsion of the way they drive a hard bargain. So if I were to go into, or in Solvang, which is everything is Dutch in Solvang, and I'm suspicious of anyone in Solvang. I'm suspicious of even the place where they have the cream puff. I'm suspicious of all of them.
Because they're Dutch?
Because they, I don't know if they really are.
Well, in any event, the plane waiting to take off was, listen to this story. The plane waiting to take off was filled with passengers and had 32 million pounds worth of diamonds in the hold. 3 minutes later, the gems were gone. All the time it needed for a gang of robbers armed with machine guns to force their way in, seize them, and escape. Not a shot was fired. The passengers were apparently unaware of the drama until their flight was canceled minutes later. It was a smash and grab. Armed robbers stealing diamonds worth more than $32 million. There was found later on the charred remains of a van suspected to have been involved in the heist. It was found by police minutes after this heist was reported. Security staff placed barriers along a safety fence where the armed robbers were believed to have burst through before making a beeline for the diamonds as they were being loaded onto the plane. And so they busted through this fence. Security came in too little, too late.
Did they? And no one was hurt?
No one was hurt. The daring heist was carried out at Brussels Airport when eight masked robbers wearing police uniforms broke through a security fence and drove onto the tarmac unchallenged in two cars with blue flashing lights. Once inside the hold, they quickly located the 120 parcels of diamonds kept in a sealed container no bigger than a shoebox. Now, so this is inside information. They knew exactly what they were looking for. They knew exactly what was going to be on that plane. They knew exactly when it was going to be on that plane. They knew exactly, you know.
Well, they had some intel, as they call it.
Yeah, they probably had intel.
Yeah, that's what, we already said that, man.
No, we didn't. Ms. Gray did.
Okay. And one of the great ruses of all time, I mean, how many times has it worked when you dress like a cop? You know.
Well, no comment. I've dressed like a cop a few times, but that's been in the privacy of my home.
Yeah, it's fine, Margaret.
Yeah.
Oh, does it make you sick?
We'd rather not hear about it.
Yeah, tell us about you dressed as a cop. What'd you do, beat up Frank's bare buttocle area?
You dirty...
All right, hey. Will you shut up? Buttocle area.
That she's talking about.
No, I did not say that.
Hold on. The daring heist was carried out... Boy, that's, to me, that's these guys, what a pair they got, man. They come busting through in cop cars. And, they can, you know... Let's see, what else? And once inside, they made off with it. That's all the news that we have. An airport spokesman said the robbers made a hole in the perimeter fence and drove up to the Swiss passenger plane, which was ready to leave while wearing outfits that resembled police uniforms. The gang threatened staff, and they seized two locked metal trunks containing the valuables as they were being loaded onto a Helvetic Airlines flight to Zurich at around 8 p.m. on Monday night. The gang's remarkable efficiency led to speculation last night that it could have been an inside job. Gee, do you think?
Well, now, why do you think it's inside?
Well, I mean, maybe not inside, because you can have this information. You can know where it is.
Yeah, what about the Lufthansa job that Henry Hill done?
Yeah. Well, now, there's a good example. The Lufthansa job, as it was illustrated in Goodfellas, that's an actual robbery that took place. It was the largest heist in American history up to that point. And it was inside. They had the help of a guard that worked there. And then it was the gang that came in, the crew that Henry Hill was with, whoever the hell these guys were.
Well, they weren't. These were, it was Jimmy, what's his face?
Right. It was. They were associates of a, not a Gambino, Lucchese. I don't know who the hell it was. Anyway. How about that? Then they made a high-speed exit through the same hole in the fence. Because many of the diamonds were uncut, the chances of recovering them are said to be very low. They had been transported from Antwerp, where 8 in 10 of the world's rough diamonds are processed. 8 of 10. So the Dutch are obviously the people to go see, huh?
Oh, absolutely. And like I said, I love the Dutch when I'm buying diamonds at a good price. But if I've taken it in the you-know-what, I can't go near a windmill. I just...
How about wooden shoes?
Don't make a joke out of it, Phil.
Well, I can't go near a windmill.
I can't.
The gang used two black cars in their raid, grabbed the cache of stones, and sped off into the darkness. Wow, man. This is a movie, huh, bud?
Yeah, I'd make a movie out of that. That's perfect.
A truck from the security company Brinks is seen at the airport's cargo scene at the... Wow. They were also, Belgium was the scene of a $100 million diamond heist 10 years ago. A $100 million diamond heist. All right, guys, the Phil Hendry Show is produced by Dan Northcraft and me, Phil Hendry. And be sure to join us online at Phil Hendry Show for all of the marvelous stuff that we have for you at philhendryshow.com. Love you, can't live without you. And don't forget, folks, until tonight at 10 Pacific, 1 a.m. tomorrow morning Eastern, let that be a lesson to you. Good night, buddy.
Phil Hendry.